Hey friends, I want to thank our sponsor, Raygun. Are you struggling to replicate the bugs and performance issues that your customers are reporting? Plug Raygun into your web and mobile applications right now and diagnose problems in minutes rather than hours. Kiss goodbye having to dig through log files and relying on frustrated users to report issues. Make your software development life so much easier using Raygun's error, crash, and performance monitoring tools. Every software team can create flawless software experiences for their customers with Raygun. Try it free today at raygun.com. That's R-A-Y-G-U-N.com. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Eugene Sandilenko. He's the lead on ScumVM. And they are celebrating the release of Blade Runner, available for purchase on digital copy at GOG. This is a point-and-click adventure game developed by Westwood Studios, originally released in 1997. And now, thanks to the effort of GOG and the great work of the folks at Scum, available for the first time again. Thank you, sir, for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. And hello, everyone.
I have been a big fan of these kind of classic graphical point-and-click adventure games. They all have a certain style. We've all seen them before, games like Maniac Mansion and Day of the Tentacle. They all look similar because they're all kind of coming from the same place. What is the history of these games?
Oh, the history of these games are coming from LucasArts. So they had this small... initially, a small game department, and they had a number of prominent and talented people collected there. But and this is where it comes from. And by the way, the name of ScumVM project is coming from the subsystem which they created for implementing those games. So Scum is deabbreviated as Script Creation Utility for Maniac Mansion. So this is the project comes from.
And it's Script Creation Utility for Maniac Mansion Virtual Machine. And in a world of things like MAME, the multi-arcade machine emulator, it's significant, don't you think, that it's not called the Script Creation Utility emulator?
Absolutely. Because as we repeatedly were telling that ScumVM is not an emulator. Actually, we do have several emulators, primarily for the sound cards like MT32, or Adlib inside of it, but ScumVM itself not. Why so? Because originally, LucasArts and Sierra, they came up with this clever idea of creating a virtual machine similar to Java VM, let's say, because it has some small set of opcodes, then it has languages, which would be easier for artists and non-developers to understand and write the game scripts. And after that, then in order to port the game to a certain new platform, and you know, at that time we had releases for many platforms like Amiga, Atari, Mac, DOS, all of them at once, it was much lower effort. So this is where VM comes from. So we are just yet another re-implementation of that virtual machine. This is how it started.
So when I was running these games in the 90s myself on a machine, was I running a virtual machine of sorts, a script runner, when I was running on the original DOS implementation that came from the LucasArts and the Sierra Onlines?
Precisely. This is what you were doing. Just you didn't know about this.
Interesting. And where have these companies gone? They're all left. And is the stuff underneath Scum like abandonware, and now this is an open source project that has picked it up? Or have you worked with any of the original engineers?
I would say neither in this particular case. So first of all, I need to mention that abandonware is not a proper legal concept, and this is very important because many people have misunderstanding. They come to us and say, hey, this game is 20 years old, can I download it from somewhere? No.
Very good point.
You know that the copyright law is called Mickey Mouse law because they extend it, they lobby it. Currently it extends to 85 years. Those companies, some of them are defunct, some of them not. So currently we have over 60 engines. I didn't count last time. So what is happening, we have, let's say, two big buckets of game engines. One of those, and this is particularly talking about Scum in this particular case, this is when we reverse engineer it from the scratch, we implement it, and we enhance it along the way. So in many cases, it has very little resemblance with original source code. Why? I'm telling you because later we were acquiring legally source code for some of those engines which were already implemented. And second bucket is when, in fact, original developers or current IP right holders approach us, they give us the source codes, usually under NDA, sometimes not, sometimes it's like free for all, and they just ask us, hey, I put my soul and time and sweat in this game, it is so sad to see it dying, dead now, not possible to run, could you guys please like use it and make it portable? Because CamVM is all about portability. So those are two parts. And I would say that about 30% of our engines are based on the original source code, and the two-thirds are actual reverse engineering from the scratch, which is a long and tedious process.
Wow. Now, why, and forgive my ignorance for the question, but if it were an emulator of sorts, like the difference between an emulator and something like ScumVM is that an emulator picks up those bytecodes and just kind of runs them and emulates, pretends to be another system. But, games based on the ScumVM engine ran on Atari or NES or Amiga. They weren't all created on DOS or Windows. Why are there engines? Why are there multiple engines? Why isn't there just one super implementation of an engine?
Okay. So because it's exactly, if it would be an emulator and you have a perfect emulator, you have DOSBox, for instance, which emulates a typical PC, mm-hmm. Bare bones, which allows to run your DOS and it also emulates DOS INT interruptions. Mm-hmm. Then you have DOSBox and then you run practically everything. I don't know, from Edlin to Microsoft Office on the same thing. And it's once for all. But then it comes with a cost of really, really high resource demand. While ScumVM is just re-implementation of the original engine. And what is happening then, if you just consider that those games are pretty old, many comes from 80s, from 90s. Mm-hmm. So the sum of the ports of ScumVM, they have 25 or 33 megahertz CPU. Mm. They have like 1 meg or 2 megabytes, like a Nintendo double screen of RAM. They may have no disks or anything, just a cartridge like Nintendo 64. And then you can imagine that the resource requirements are very low and portable as such, because then you can run it on mobile devices without fear of draining your battery or something like this.
Ah, okay. And this will allow you also to make games available from one engine available everywhere. So games that were never released for DOS or Windows can now be moved over here.
Absolutely, because how ScumVM works internally, we have a hardware abstraction layer. It's called OSystem. Mm-hmm. And then once some developer familiar with some specific platform comes and they implement, as we call it, backend for this platform, then all of the engines which would be compatible with physical capabilities of this machine would just run. And similarly, if an engine author comes to us and writes an engine on top of our system, that would mean that it will run on practically all of the ports which we have. Why I'm mentioning that practically all of them? Because sometimes you may have restrictions, like you may have a certain resolution, hardware resolution for the screen. You may have certain games requiring keyboard input, but you don't, and stuff like this.
In the past, on the emulator side, a lot of projects have had an uncomfortable relationship with with publishers, but it's a significant, at least from my perspective as a user, that ScumVM as an open source project seems to have a very positive relationship with publishers. Has that been a conscious decision on the part of the team to partner with publishers, respect copyright, and then work on formally re-releasing games?
That's a very good question, because it touches deeply exactly the question of abandonware. From the very beginning, we wanted to strictly follow the copyright law, and we had attempt in the past. We had several attempts from LucasArts and also from other parties to send us cease and desist letters, etc. But since we are not violating the copyright law, because always you would need to have original game assets, ScumVM is just the executable drop-in replacement. Then there was nothing in like unlawful, and this is why it gives safety. It gives safety to the project first of all, but then it gives safety and assurance to the let's say IP rights owners, which entrust us their intellectual property, like game assets or for studying or original source code, because we have reputation of not giving away anything, of not disclosing anything which we have NDA signed. And this is why many companies actually happy to collaborate with us. And I can, for instance, mention one of the biggest recent releases is Myst Anniversary Collection, 25th years. This was created in close collaboration between Cyan and ScumVM. Unfortunately, they lost all the source codes. We had the implementation, but we need a lot of number of enhancements specifically for this. And we, as a result, released Ultimate Multi-Language game for the Riven and for the Myst and for the Myst Masterpiece, which was not existent just because if we were just working with the IP rights owners. And they were safe with us. We were cool with them. And as you see, this is there. It's on the market.
It feels like it would be really hard to find the people who own the intellectual property 20, 30 years later. Is that part of the partnership that you have with folks like GOG, that they help hunt those people down and then negotiate that? Because I'm assuming that's not the fun part of the job. You want to write some cool code.
Yes, it is pretty challenging, and very often. Sometimes we approach. So what we do just approach different people from the credits for different games and, hey, do you still have it? Can you legally share it with us? Blah, blah, blah. With GOG.com, what helps is that they collaborate with IP right owners. And very often those IP right owners, that could be a third party, not original ones, but then they can get assets. And I can give you a perfect example about this. One of the latest games on Scum, still not yet supported fully, is Moonbase Commander. It is the latest. The engine was extremely enhanced, and it was in a limbo for a long while. But then I noticed on GOG.com that they started to sell it, and I have a good relationship with them. I approach them and say, hey, folks, do you still have a, like, could you please contact, introduce me towards the IP rights owners. IP rights owners were super happy about this because they are seeking for increased compatibility. Currently, Moonbase Commander is Windows only. They would like to have it on Mac, for Linux, other platforms. And as such, they just under NDA shared with the team, and particularly with me, the game assets, the original source code. And we finally were able to start working on the missing pieces. So yes, it does happen.
The folks at Disney released Maniac Mansion on Steam. And Disney, I think of as being, as you said, with the Mickey Mouse copyright laws, the biggest and scariest and most kind of aggressive. They guard their copyright very significantly.
So, but exactly, there is no problem, because you have difference. So game assets are copyrighted. Game engine is standalone. So they provide the full ScumVM source code. So they comply with GPL. We are happy. And they're happy because now Maniac Mansion runs on Linux, coming from Steam.
That's amazing. And just to be clear for the audience who is listening, Maniac Mansion ran on DOS, if I recall, exclusively in the early 90s.
Actually, not really, because that one is, yes, DOS, mm-hmm. Amiga, Atari, but all the dev platform, NES, even. Yes.
At the time. Yeah.
Now they're in Mac, and those are all long dead. You cannot run this on any modern hardware. Of course, you can run it in DOSBox or in, let's say, Amiga emulator. Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned, you would need to know the specifics of Amiga platform in order to even launch it from a virtual floppy or whatever what you're doing. While with CAMVM, it's just point it to the game and push the button, run, start the game.
Fantastic. Hi, friends. As a programmer, you think in objects. With MongoDB, so does your database. MongoDB is the most popular document-based database built for modern application developers in the cloud era. Millions of developers use MongoDB to power the world's most innovative products and services, from cryptocurrency to online gaming, IoT, and more. You can try MongoDB today with Atlas, the global cloud database service that runs on AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud. Configure, deploy, and connect to your database in just a few minutes. Check it out at mongodb.com/atlas. That's mongodb.com/atlas. Now, I've had a physical copy of Blade Runner since, I think, 97 or 98, and it's just been a great game. And a couple of years ago, I tried getting it running under an emulator and had all kinds of challenges around resolution and kind of just gave it up trying to figure out how to get Blade Runner to work. And then I heard that it is now available again for purchase, and it's been referred to by you as the Holy Grail of games for ScumVM. What is it that's so challenging and so mysterious about Blade Runner?
Yes, Blade Runner. Oh, we were dreaming about support of it so many years. I myself, it was on my short list of the titles which I would love to see. Mm-hmm. And it joined, like, completed this list as the latest. The thing is that Blade Runner doesn't have this VM. And everything in the game is written in plain C, I think, or C++ for everything. So basically, every location is a separate DLL, and there are over 60 of those. So amount of reverse engineering work is enormous. At some point in time, it was the biggest engine and ScumVM. Recently just overshadowed by the interactive fiction. It's a collection of engines running under a single umbrella. But it was bigger than Scum engine, which supports like 30 titles. It was bigger than Sierra SCI, which supports like other 50 titles. And it is just for a single game. It is over 100,000 lines of code in ScumVM, all written manually out of disassembly. It was a tremendous amount of work. Four people were working on it. I was also doing big chunk of work for every actor, because every actor is a state machine with a quite complex logic. I think at this moment it is definitely the biggest effort of the team so far. This is the biggest amount of time which we spent so far. It's very, very technically complex. And the game itself internally is not an easy. If you heard about the capabilities of the flexibility of the game, and that you have like 16 endings, and then there is like relationships between those non-playable characters in the game, they developed through the game, so this is why you have a lot higher replayability. All of this logic has to be re-implemented by us.
Wow. And this game was incredibly ahead of its time. I mean, it was using voxels and combining 3D and characters and 2D backgrounds. I know that there was talk of how hard it is to have 3D in Scum versus 2D. It gets exponentially more difficult the more that's happening on the screen, isn't it?
Yes and no, because Blade Runner particularly is not a 3D game. It uses voxels, but it is just basically, it pre-renders out of voxels all of those sprites for actors, and then just renders them. So you cannot turn the camera. The camera is always fixed point because, as you mentioned, background is just 2D dimensional, and it has no polygons. So there is no you cannot accelerate it with OpenGL, RTX, or whatever. It's all software rendering. So part which deals at least with 3D points is maybe like 500 lines of code. The rest of 100,000 has nothing to do with 3D.
What was the hardest part of it, and how did you split the responsibility up? Because the team is you're not all sitting in the same place, right? You're geographically distributed.
We're using Trello board for this.
And is it something, you said it's big and it's a lot of code and it's tangled. Do you split up responsibility by subsystem? Like, okay, you handle resolution and you handle audio. How do you split up your responsibility?
Yes, that was like this. So the engine started, the work on it started about 8 years ago. We implemented character rendering, first scene. And then it was dead. It was then staying in limbo of maybe like four years or so. And then Peter Kohout came out of blue with maybe like 20,000 lines of code already, additional reverse engineers. He joined the team and he sparked this interest in us. So Mad Moose, another guy who originally started the engine, he was excited. And Peter continued with Kia, this internal complex database for clues. Then I was working on actors' logic. Mad Moose was working on the logic for every location. So this is how we were doing. And then whatever issues or whatever new subsystem we were finding, we were just creating a new card on Trello, and then whoever completes their task, this is how we were doing. I would say that my part of it was episodical. However, it led to maybe like 20,000 lines of code written because of just the number of those actors' logic. But then the other folks were making it to the production quality.
Wow. Now, I understand that this has been, 8 years, 9 years or longer in the making, the reverse engineering? Is that full-time work, or is it something that happens where you do a whole lot of work and then you wait for a lawyer for months?
It started 8 years ago, but the bulk of work, and I would say that 8 years ago till 5 years ago from now, 5% of it were written. And then it was much, much faster, like ramping up, and we completed bulk of the work where most of the work was finished in 2018 and 17. And definitely it is not a full-time work because all of us work for the companies. We are all volunteers. But I was spending every evening on doing all of those actors because there are, I don't remember, like 60 or so, like huge amount. And for some, logic is pretty simple. Maybe a simple is like 500 lines of code, but some of them like thousands lines of code. So it took time.
Wow. The idea that these projects, we think we, the community that just get to go now and go to GOG, buy a game for $10 and enjoy it. And I think the important part is to simply enjoy it because it just works. We sometimes forget the cast of thousands and the years and years of work behind it, especially when it's open source work and everyone has a day job. It's definitely a passion project.
Exactly, because Scott, important thing, we are not paid for this. We were not paid by GOG or anyone else. So this is why, for instance, when people come to us angrily and they say, hi, why are you so dumb that you not implemented this feature? Sometimes it's a bit frustrating and discouraging to hear. We do it out of love, and the very fact that you, like random John Doe, is able to play it is just a counterproduct of us, of our love. Not that you are entitled to do it. We don't benefit from GOG selling this game, unless, of course, we have only this affiliation program with them, but not on bulk.
That's a really important point. And it is also important for you to know, and for, I hope, the other members of the team to know, how much it truly is appreciated. For me to be able to sit down with my now 10-year-old and 12-year-old and play Maniac Mansion or Blade Runner and share with them something that was important to me when I was a kid and have it just work is truly, truly extraordinary. And then when they're older, to even be able to go and look at the source code, if they decide to become programmers and discuss the technology behind it with them, adds another exciting layer to that relationship that we have with these games.
Oh, it is like your experience, Scott, is really related to me, because one of my biggest motivation to work on ScumVM was because I found how marvelous humongous entertainment games are. And I was making sure that I'm raising my daughters on Freddy Fish, Putt-Putt, Pajama Sam. And this is where we put a lot of effort into it. Yes.
Yeah, it's really special, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
So the most amazing thing, and at least the most recent thing that you all have done is Blade Runner. But I also understand that sometimes you'll just find some obscure game and someone will get excited about it and you'll get support for it just because. How do you balance your time between the eight year long experience of something like Blade Runner and then just finding a game that maybe only a few dozen people will play and then making support for that?
So we are making support for random games only if the person comes or somebody comes to us with the full source code. Then. The rest were done just because somebody, some ScumVM developer, has passion about this game and they have personal interest and they would like to do it. Like how the project started. The project started because two persons independently, one wanted to play Monkey Island 2 on Linux and another one on Monkey Island 1. And the first one, after implementing Monkey Island 2, making it playable, and then just a couple of more games from Scum Engine just left. And we had a number of people like this coming to us, working for a couple of years on an engine, and then leaving the project. This is how it works. So when somebody comes to us and say, hey, I would like to, I have this childhood memory, could you please implement it? It's difficult to justify of working like half a year, at least half a year of your free time in the evenings on something you don't find interesting and you are not attached to. If there is a source code, the work becomes much, much easier. On the source code, when we had this, like the typical time when you have something playable is like month or two, much faster. So this is why it is like cool, because then our like library of supported games expanded. But other than that, no. Like this is a fat chance that somebody would work on it just because they've been asked.
There's some pretty cool stories. Like for example, Terry Pratchett and Perfect Entertainment found the source code for Discworld and Discworld 2 and made that available to you. Mm-hmm. And that game became available. And then also, you know, games that might not necessarily be interesting globally, but might be interesting locally, like Soltis, a Polish game, it was created in 1995. And the team's like, you know, we want to make sure that this lives beyond us and it doesn't get lost. So that if someone wants to play this game, they can. That's pretty amazing.
Exactly. One of the great examples of this is the author of Dreamweb. There is this game, Dreamweb, top-down adventure. And the author came to us and he thought, hey, recently copyright was returned to me. Here is the source code. Go ahead, do it. And by the way, here is the game assets. Make it freeware. Do it. We were so happy about this.
Wow.
This is how it happened. He wanted his game, his creation, to live beyond all of those old and aging platforms.
That is significant, really, really significant. Dreamweb is a 1994 cyberpunk game, and the idea that something is being re-released as freeware when the copyright is returned, that really speaks to that original thing that we talked about at the beginning of the discussion about abandonware is not a thing, right? It may be forgotten, but it's never abandoned. You know, there's always some legal thing going on there.
Correct.
Yeah. So how can we help ScumVM? You say that you're not in it for the money. There's a large team working on it. Do you want us, the audience, to just buy and support the games that are released on ScumVM? Or how can we let you know that we appreciate all the things that we're doing, that you're doing?
There are a couple of ways of doing it. And let me just mention about this in order of our preference, mm-hmm. but not necessarily of order of being easy for the audience.
Sure.
What we would appreciate the most if it's developers. For instance, at this moment, and this is really, really painful for us, that these games are point and click. And as you imagine, and by the way, Gron Gilbert himself was mentioned when we had a port on iOS, that finally he has Monkey Island as it meant to be played with your fingertips, not with a mouse. But we don't have an iOS porter for several years now. Same with Android. We don't have like young generation who has experience with this platform. They're thinking about, oh, instead of working on some open source project, let for myself do some coding and put my, I don't know, game which I make it or app on store and get some buck. Mm-hmm. Why should I spend time on some guys for free? Mm. And this is a problem because on Android we have over 500,000 installs, but we have troubles with anything beyond Android 7, which is now 5 years old. So any developers hearing this and would like to join the open source project with like over 15 million downloads, there are certain benefits. That would be the most preference. Second one, if you know, for instance, somebody who possesses a source code or pieces of source code for some game you love, you care for, then let them contact us. Maybe we can work on this game. So this would be the second preference. Third one, non-developers, but those who would like to help the project. For instance, keeping our manual and documentation up to date. So you just need to know or translate it into another language other than English, like in German, Russian, I don't know, Chinese, whatever, because now we have capabilities for translation. This is also. And the last one, not that we need it, but there is always PayPal button. Or when you buy games from GOG.com, if you use our affiliation link, the price for you stays the same. We would have just small commission out of it. It could also help us to pay hosting or something like this. But this is the least preference.
Very cool. I'm going to make sure to include in the show notes links to all of the things that you've talked about, as well as a link to buy Blade Runner on GOG using your affiliate link. So we hopefully will hear from some folks who are listening to the show and appreciate all the hard work that you and the team put into this thing. It has really been a joy to chat with you today, and it's been a real joy to play Blade Runner again and other games that are now supported, over 250 games in the library of adventures that you can play with ScumVM. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. It was a pleasure.
We've been talking with Eugene Sandilenko from ScumVM Project. You can check them out at scummvm.org. There will be links again in the show notes. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.